Here we go. Yes, the John Curley Sherry Elliker Show. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Let's get to it. Let's talk about. All righty. You and I don't agree on this abortion thing, Sherry, but we do have a rather civil conversation about it. I have a friend of mine whose mom wanted to go protesting. They talked about it at Mother's Day. She was going to go out there and go protest somewhere. So somebody doxed and put out all the addresses or most of the addresses of those on the Supreme Court. And so you had a bunch of people are out in front of Kavanaugh's house. What, over the weekend, right? Protesting. The White House was asked about it on, I think, was it Thursday or something, and said they didn't have an opinion. The president has no opinion on that, but, you know, peaceful protests and stuff like that. Now, I think today they came back with that they don't agree with it. I think they sort of somewhat came around to the idea that they don't want it. They don't believe in intimidating the judges. It is against the law. I don't know the actual what the federal law is, number 18.2 something or other. Basically, you can't intimidate jurors, you can't intimidate judges, you can't go to their homes, you can't protest out front, you can't have speakers, you're not allowed to march around, you can't do that in order to try to get the judge or the jury to do something. It's a way of sort of involving yourself personally in there to intimidate the system. So it is against the law. I don't know if they told these people that were out there protesting, you're breaking the law, but you can get fined $250,000 and go to jail for 1 year if you do something like that. So I don't know if that stopped the people that were out there protesting, but Channel 9 was talking about this is out of Washington, D.C.
Rain did not stop dozens of pro-choice protesters from taking to the quiet streets of Chevy Chase, Maryland, to make one thing clear.
You don't get to take away my bodily autonomy and enjoy your Saturday night at home. You can do one or the other.
First stop, Justice Brett Kavanaugh's home.
It's against the law, by the way. You can't protest in front of a judge's house.
Where they were greeted by Montgomery County police officers.
Oh, there we go.
Then they headed over to Chief Justice John Roberts' residence with a similar message. Lacey Wooten Hallway, who has had an abortion and is a sexual assault survivor, has been holding candlelight vigils in front of Justice Kavanaugh's home. But since the draft opinion indicating the Supreme Court is poised to overturn Roe v. Wade was leaked, the crowd keeps growing.
You know, if you take away our choices, we will riot.
Organizers say that some residents...
They're not taking away your choices. They're not taking away your choice. They're going to give it to the legislators. Let the legislators decide. You're going to be able to, you actually will have more, you'll be more involved. You'll be more involved because you can vote for the person. And the person can say, yes, you can have this. It's 10 weeks or 15 weeks or 20 weeks or unlimited or whatever it is. You can have a legislator determine. You'll be more involved now than you've ever been involved. You get a chance to make the decision on the legislator that's running and you get a chance to vote on that. You actually have democracy. Your voice will be better heard than the 9 justices that will be there. So this is actually going to be better for people. There'll be some states that will be less restrictive. Mississippi, by the way, is less restrictive than I think France or Denmark. So some places in Europe, I think, are 90 days. Others are 10 weeks. I think Mississippi is 15. So it's actually better for everybody if you allow the democracy to occur. You allow democracy and you allow laws to be written rather than having 9 justices, or in 1973-74, have 7 people make the determination that this is the right.
And I think it's...
What?
I was going to say, I think it's only better if that's your perspective, if you think that's more fair because of it satisfying both sides a little bit more. But if you're someone who believes that abortion fundamentally should be a right and should be accessible to the degree that it is now, then yes, those rights are diminished significantly. While abortion will be illegal, but it will be severely restricted, at least in 13 states to begin with, then it isn't the same thing. And it isn't better for them if that's what you believe in. With respect to this woman, this Lacey Wooten Holloway, who is protesting in front of, you know, these justices' homes, she's obnoxious. I mean, it's, you know, it, first of all, what she's doing is just getting herself some attention, because honestly, does she really think it's going to sway a Supreme Court justice because she's out in front of, you know, his home or the two justices' homes? I mean, it's not effective what she's doing. But I do think that, you know, her point is that this should be available as it stands to women as they need it, and they shouldn't have to seek out a different way to get an abortion.
But to this woman, let's remove the abortion part of it. Do we really want that type of society where you get enough people to scream and yell and intimidate a judge to change their position? So then we are now basically all barbarians. Now, through sheer force and threats and firebombs and intimidation, that through intimidation, not through law, we wouldn't be a society of laws, we'd be a society of who's able to intimidate, to scare, to possibly harm somebody physically into changing their opinion, so that the law is different for us now. Because then if we start to establish, well, this is the way we get things done, we just scream and yell and set things on fire and we write graffiti and then we say things like, we're going to release the whirlwind, as Chuck Schumer said, right? Is this the type of society we want to become? We want to be a land of laws?
Well,
or do we want to be who can create more violence or possibility of violence? You don't want that, because once we head down that road, I mean, what separates us from some real, you know, horrible banana republic where in Haiti, where they assassinate leaders, or we do it through bribes and intimidation and mob rule? This is mob rule. You don't want this. Nobody wants this. So the judges, as that prior to Roe v. Wade, every state had their rules, had their laws, had restrictions and stuff. And then when they cobbled together this idea that somewhere in the First Amendment or somewhere in the 14th Amendment, you had a right to it, even the judges knew this is, I can't quite figure this whole thing out. And then even when they came back to Casey, and it was Scalia. Do you have Scalia's sound somewhere? Here's Scalia. Listen how Scalia explains. This is in 2011. He's saying, you know, once they got into Casey, which was then you had to talk about an undue burden. What is an undue burden?
I am, on the other hand, inclined to acknowledge that any legal philosophy, whatever it is, has to make an exception for stare decisis. You cannot reinvent the wheel. So, you know, for example, the most of the decisions that have been made erroneously under the Equal Protection Clause or the Eighth Amendment or whatnot, I'm willing to, you know, say, well, you know, it's water over the dam. Not all of them. Some of them I will not accept. One of the ones I won't accept is Roe versus Wade or Casey, whatever the current evolution of that is. That's a special category of case that I cannot accept, because it puts me in the position of being a legislator rather than a judge when we have our next abortion rights case. Let's assume it's a state statute that requires a certain staffing of abortion facilities. You need so many doctors, so many nurses. You need a certain type of equipment, all of which makes it much more expensive to have an abortion. The question for me under Casey does this impose an undue burden on the woman's constitutional right to abortion? So I, you know, undue burden. I'm a lawyer. I run to the law books to look up undue. What do you know? No burden was an undue burden for several centuries. I can't use the law books. What do I use? What do I use? I mean, what do you think we're going to talk about when that next case comes up? I guarantee you, we're going to sit around, the nine of us, and nobody else in the room. We say, yeah, let's see, nine doctors, five nurses. I don't think that's an undue burden. You think it's an undue burden? How many think it's an undue burden, right? Right. That's five. It's an undue burden. That's not law, and I won't do that.
To me, that's it. And that, let the legislators make laws. Let the judges determine whether or not those laws are constitutional. Don't have them cobble something together. So when this thing ends and they make this decision, which I think it's going to be June, they're not going to, you know, have it come out sooner. You will see each state then decide what the laws will. Mississippi, 15 weeks. Texas might be more restrictive or might be less restrictive. You'll have Missouri as well. That could be, you know, whatever the rules are. It's going to line up a lot like in Europe, in France, in Denmark. There'll be 10 weeks or 15 weeks or 20 weeks or 24 weeks, whatever it is. So let the legislators. Why, as somebody that you're pro-choice, do you fear that legislators will not listen to the public?
Yeah, of course they won't. I mean, I think that they can vote people in that are like-minded, and I think that's always the possibility. But when you talk about these subjects, as I've said many, many times, you're not going to change anybody's mind. So if you have a person that believes that life begins at conception and that any form of abortion, whether it's under any circumstances, whether it be rape or incest or life of the mother, whatever it is, if that's what they fundamentally believe, you won't change that. And the same thing goes for people like this woman who believe fundamentally that it is a woman's right to do with her body what she chooses, and that nobody, man or otherwise, should have the right to say, I'm going to tell you that you have to have a child or you have to have a pregnancy that you don't want. So when you have those two extremes, you're never going to find a middle ground. And logic isn't always going to work when it's so emotional and it's so passionate, whether it be because of your religion or because of your firm and belief in a woman's right to be able to do what she thinks is appropriate with a pregnancy.
Right.
So I understand what you're saying, that when you have these things where, so what's the problem here? 15 weeks, you have 15 weeks to make that decision. Why is that a problem? You have this amount of time to do this, or you can travel to another state.
Mm-hmm.
It is reasonable in some cases, but it is not practical in other cases. And I think that's what we're dealing with here, is that it's all or nothing for the people who are screaming the loudest, either side.
But it's not all or nothing. And the legislators that get elected because they're representing the majority viewpoints on things, right? So if 68% of Americans, whatever the number is, believe that abortions should be available, but they should occur only in the first trimester, the legislator, the elected person, or the person who would like to be the elected official says, I believe that abortion should be rare, restricted only to occur in the first trimester. This is what I agree. And 68% of people go, yeah, that's what I think too. Well, then that's who you're going to vote for. That's who you'll vote for. But if somebody else comes up and says, no, I believe no restrictions, and you could even be able to abort the child at the point of crowning of the skull of the child, then that person runs, and such a small percentage, I think only about 8 or 11% of people like that idea, that person will not win. The other person will win through a series of negotiations and compromises. All laws eventually get written and approved, and the legislators that put those places reflect the people that want that. So some states are more restrictive and others are less restrictive, and it's because those are the elected officials that are representing those people, the population. So that's what's coming. It'll be to the people. And if you don't like it, then vote that person out or find somebody in there and get that other person to run. And you can change the laws. Don't make it happen. Don't make the Supreme Court truck come up with it. And I think this thing ends up when, I think July is where eventually it'll just kick it back to the states, just the way it was before Roe versus Wade. Same thing in the state of Washington. What was the state of Washington like prior to Roe? What states had restrictions? What states didn't have restrictions prior to Roe? It was all in the states, all about democracy. Why is that a problem for people?
The problem is that back then, because states had so many restrictions, a lot of women died, because in between the time that it takes to be able to vote someone in, to have an election, years go by and there are many, many unwanted pregnancies and many women who are desperate to find a way out of that. And therefore, it could become another, you know, a slew of unsafe abortions and illegal abortions and things like that. So when I say it's all or nothing, what I'm saying is that the people that are on, you know, that have the strongest belief systems that it is all or nothing, it's either no abortion or abortion at any cost, they're the ones that are kind of, you know, taking it to an extreme, like what this woman is doing outside of the justice's house, hanging red right. coat hangers. I mean,
which is illegal. Stuff like,
which, and it's ineffective. That's not going to intimidate a Supreme Court justice. It's just going to make her look bad, and it's going to make, you know, the justices feel like, okay, I need security. Other than that, it's not going to be useful to do that. So, but you're going to get this, right? I mean, because it's a time when people are going to start, just like the pro-abortion people who would walk around with signs, with horrifying images on those signs out in front of the Supreme Court or in front of abortion clinics to intimidate women. I mean, they're not, you know, their hands aren't clean on this either in terms of drastic tactics or really, you know, shocking type things that they did to get their right. point across.
Well, I think the point they're trying to make is that is a human being. It's not, don't use euphemisms, it's a human being. And for them, it's murder. That's the whole
right.
thing.
And,
it is murder because there's a life and then you end the life. And then the question is, does the state have responsibility to protect all life? And that's where, you know, you get into this negotiation of 15 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever else it is. A lot of those abortions that had occurred, those back alley abortions, a lot of that was also because of where we were as a society, for people didn't want to admit that they were pregnant, didn't want anybody to know. It was so secretive. There was all this shame that was surrounding, you know, unmarried women that were having sex. I mean, the sexual revolution that really, truly burgeoned and changed society really got rolling in the late 70s and the 80s, where there wasn't the shame of this sort of stuff. Plus, science is also going to step in. You're going to have more sort of after morning pills and things like that. This discussion will go away. It'll be just like they do in Europe. They let the people decide in Europe. You don't see anybody protesting in Europe. You don't see anybody marching. We've been marching. People have been marching for the last 50 years because of this thing. Right? They still march down there in January. You see them, Sherry. They're out there marching around in the cold for the last for 50 years about abortion. So once it gets to the legislators, there you go. You can battle it out and actually make a law and elect the people. You'll have more voice. That's what I think will happen. But
yep.
In the meantime, you'll have a bunch of people possibly creating some violence. And, you know, I know Alito has gone into hiding. I don't know who else has had to hide, but it's a very sad statement on where we are as a society that mob rules.
Well, I think that it's probably a foregone conclusion how this is going to end.
Yeah.
And
oh,
it's
yeah.
going to then become, I mean, I don't know if it's going to get worse or it's going to get better, because people will ease into the idea that this is, here we go, the new
yeah.
normal.
Oh, man, she said it, didn't she?
No, she didn't mention pivot, though. She didn't pivot to the
I did.
New normal.
I would never
All
say
right.
that. Never. All or
right,
amazing.
Okay, never. Okay. Okay. Probably the beginning of The Odd Couple, then, right there. Mm-hmm. All righty. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. You know, they've got 16 locations, Sherry. Do you know they've been around for 52 years?
52? That's
52.
A lot, yeah.
That is a long time. Dog years, that'd be what, like 280?
Well, let's see. If dog years are 7 years.
7 years. Okay, let's do
are
different
not,
math
yeah,
on the
7 years.
Years
so, yeah,
CDC, we'll come back to that. CDC has decided it wanted to follow you during COVID, and they have purchased. They got 1 year for free. I guess you get 1 year free, then they start to charge you. So CDC bought cell phone data to track vaccination, lockdown compliance. This, according to the New York Post, plus others have it as well. Reason finds it. They did a Freedom of Information request, and the journalists found that the CDC was tracking people to see when they went to church, They found out where they were going. I don't know how many phones they were following. They wanted to see where they were going with their phones during the time of the lockdowns. You concerned by this at all? Shocked by this?
Well, they say that they wanted to use the research points of interest for physical activities to make sure they could have some chronic disease prevention techniques. So if they could see where people were headed, they were going to the gym a lot, they were doing this, then they could see if there were, I guess, there was spreading of the disease. Am I surprised? No, not particularly. I really wonder what it did, though, because it didn't really stop anybody from doing anything. It just collected the information. But it is one of those things where if they started this, they'll continue to do it.
Well, we saw what they did in Australia, that they were tracking you. They knew where your phone was. And then they would then send you a text saying, send us a picture of yourself. Show us that you're in quarantine. They gave you then 5 minutes to take a photograph of yourself in your home or whatever it was. And then they would try to come and get you if you weren't where you were supposed to be, which is in your home. And then they knew where you were because they had your phone, and then they would come and arrest you. So this is the government tracking you for your own good. They know where you were going. They knew how many people were going. Then the people are like, well, what about if somebody were to, the government's tracking you with your phone and then knowing, and then they included in this discussion or the other article I'd read that what if they knew that you went to an abortion clinic, or what if they knew you went here or you went there? And the story of a priest who they were tracking, somehow they got the information where the priest was from his phone, and they found out that the priest had gone to a gay bar. Did you see that part of the story?
Yeah, I did. Yes, right. They figured out that he was on some of these social media places and, you know, dating sites or whatever, and gone to a gay bar, and he got fired.
Yeah. I know that they track you. The FBI has been, you know, following people. They listen to your phone calls. They do everything else they can do. And it's the whole idea that, oh, don't worry about it. We're here to help you. I don't know if anybody trusts the CDC. The government having more information on where you are and knowing where you're going. I would find that to be a deeply concerning. So if there are those people who are upset about people's rights to freedom and privacy, they might want to also be protesting the CDC.
However, the CDC, given their track record in terms of competence, do you really think
good,
they're doing
that's true?
I mean, come on, you know, they can't get it together on a lot of things. What are they really going to do with this data? I mean, I thought it was interesting that they didn't tell how many people this involved. I mean, was this 200 people, 200 million people? And where is the, I mean, I think they spent, what, $480,000 on it. So it couldn't have been that many people that they were tracking. So it sounds like it was something that it was a trial for future use in the event that we had some kind of disastrous something else. And they wanted to see if something like this was worthwhile.
The good news is when the next pandemic comes along, people like Dr. Gates are going to be able to help us. I mean, Bill Gates, Dr. Gates.
It wasn't until early February when I was in a meeting that experts at the foundation said, there's no way, you know, there's been too much travel without diagnosis for us to contain this. And then at that point, we didn't really understand the fatality rate. You know, we didn't understand that it's a fairly low fatality rate, and that it's a disease mainly of the elderly, kind of like flu is, although a bit different than that. So that was a pretty scary period,
right,
where the world didn't go on alert, including the United States, nearly as fast as it needed to.
So the fatality rate, which the numbers we never knew, was how many cases and then how many deaths. We were unsure on the case number. The case number was a lot lower. We thought the cases are lower, but the deaths, then the fatality rate would appear to be higher. If you had 100 million people infected and you had 20,000 people dying, then those were the numbers that you'd work with in order to continue to sort of do the rest of the math for fatality rate. But we didn't know. We didn't know the true infection rate, because you would have people that would be asymptomatic or never got tested. And now we're finding out the true fatality rate is about, what, 0.2%. So total amount of people that got it, and then those that ended up having it take their life. So at the first, that big study that came out of the UK from that guy, I think Ferguson or whatever his name was, he said it was going to be like 2 to 3 million people were going to be dying in the next like 6 or 7 months or something like that. He ran the numbers based upon an extreme high of you get it and you die. And the numbers were big enough that causing everybody to panic. And that's when I think it was what the date was. Remember that when Donald Trump went on and said, the president of the United States went on and said, we're going to shut everything down for like 14 days.
Well, yeah, but John, didn't Bill Gates just come out like last week and said that we should have been like Australia and shut everything down and done something that was much more extreme? So which is it? Is it a fairly mild disease now that he's admitting killed people because they had pre-existing conditions? Or is it that he thought that we should be in lockdown for months and months and months? What's his position here?
We have to get Bill Gates. Jacob, book Bill.
Okay.
I see he's selling a book.
Oh, really? Shocking.
Wow. Would you want to have dinner with him?
Sure. Bill Gates? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Jacob.
Yeah, he'd be interesting. Yeah.
We'll get him on the show, and then we're going to take him out to dinner.
I'll probably lead with asking him if he can weigh in on the mouse situation. And then
okay,
see.
Do that, and then see about dinner. Mickey's in.
He is a big brain.
And we're going to make him pay, too. It's not going to be like when Tom's last dinner, where we all had the same fish. All right. All right, I want to talk Kentucky Derby. Or a man waits in line for $5,000, Sherry.
Oh, let's talk Kentucky Derby.
All right. Now people are saying it was fixed.
Yeah. You know, this comes out like every year. Have you ever been, like I used to work the Preakness when I was working in Baltimore, and would have to go there as part of the radio thing. And I sort of became interested in horse racing a little bit and was conflicted about it, because I don't know if it's really a good sport for the horses, but it's, you know, it's interesting, and it's, I think, a fun sport to watch, especially, you know, when the Triple Crown stuff. But every year there's talk of this about, you know, whether or not there's doping, where there's, you know, if there's somebody, if the horses are, you know, okay to run, or if they've been, you know, doped up too much, or if the jockeys are throwing a race or things like that. So that's nothing new. But this Kentucky Derby, this is pretty incredible what happened with Rich Strike.
This looks like something from a Walt Disney movie, where Don Knotts is the jockey way in the back. So Rich Strike wasn't even supposed to be in it. I think another horse was supposed to be in there, wasn't in there. So then Rich Strike gets a terrible place coming out of the gate. And if you watch when you watch the race,
the stretch, then it's Messier, Crown Pride, then
I kept saying that it was, put the little yellow bubble on the thing. Where is he? I couldn't figure out where he was. So far in the back, and then slowly made his way up, kind of in there. What
is coming up on the outside? Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next.
You know what's pretty amazing? You know this guy has those names memorized, right? Those jockeys, those colors, those numbers. I'm sure he had to look down like, who the hell is that? Like, watch how quickly he gets Rich Strike in.
They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter's handed. Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby.
He must have had it memorized, because he just picked right up on it. What analysis is that what had happened was that the first four or six went out so fast, they finished the first half mile in 40, was it, what they did, the first one in 45 seconds or something, they said they went out blistering pace and the horses just sort of got skunked and ran out of steam, and Rich Strike was able to kind of hang in the back and make the big push at the end. But amazing how the jockey was able to navigate through all of those horses to find that break and to get in there, and ends up paying what, 80 to 1?
80 to 1. Yep. 80 to 1. I don't know. I didn't read what the payout was, what the biggest payout was. Did you? How much all of this was worth? But it's a great story. I mean, this is the type of thing you go to the Kentucky Derby to see, you know, is you go to this type of thing, unless your money's all on the, you know, front runners. But yeah, so afterward, the tweets were pretty, you know, suspicious. It said, you know, a lot of people are saying that it was suspicious that this one horse dropped out at the last minute, that, you know, Rich Strike wasn't even supposed to be in the race, that it just proves it's rigged. But I don't know. I don't really think it is.
Did they bring up Jeffrey Epstein?
They did not bring up Jeffrey. Why? Was Jeffrey Epstein a... what's his conspiracy theory with
it? Yeah, something involved in there. Yeah, he reached out and grabbed a hold of the horse, and it made the horse mad. He didn't know he was trying to help him. And now I'm reading about Rich Strike biting somebody. Strike bit Churchill Downs' lead pony and got punched for it. Oh, wow. Now they're piling on. Poor Rich Strike.
Really? Of course they have to dig up dirt on the horse. That's what we do, right? You know, we bring them up, and then we do everything we can to tear it down, even a horse.
Knock them down. You're right. Can the horse enjoy just 24 hours of being the Kentucky Derby winner?
Before you cancel him? Come on.
Come on. He got excited. He bit the other horse and the pony.
Yeah.
I don't know what he paid on the thing. But you get those. This is a sport. This is a knowledge that, like, men are supposed to know about. You need a box of trifecta. You're like, thinking about that. I got no idea, right?
Yeah. It is complicated.
Yeah, going into a lumber store, doing this sort of thing, poker, knowledge you're supposed to have. And if you don't have it as a guy, people are like, what are you not going to bet the flop? You're not going to bet the flop on the. I'm like, I know.
You got to bet to place, to show. First, trifecta, you got to know all that.
Oh, look at Mickey. You want a box of trifecta, Mickey, do you?
Yeah.
Huh? You want a box of trifecta?